Okay, so welcome, Rachel P. We look forward to hearing your share on emotional sobriety, the doctor's opinion, and other things. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. All right, and thanks for having me. I'm Rachel P. I'm a recovered controller fixer. Happy to see some faces I haven't seen in a while. Hi. So today I want to talk about it's interesting. It's funny because it doesn't even come up for me so much. Like when I think about the doctor's opinion, for me, a lot of times that is about the physical allergy. Like that really is what kind of I got a lot out of it, the doctor's opinion. But what I really want to talk about today, which is what I've been working with a lot lately, is this line in the doctor's opinion that says, and I'm going to modify it for this meeting. Men and women drink, men and women act out, men and women create chaos, men and women control, fix, obsess, avoid, whatever you want to say, that we do what we do, right? We act out essentially because we like the effect produced by doing it, right? I'm going to read just a little bit more of it, and then I want to talk about that line. The sensation is so elusive that while I admit that it is injurious, I cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false, right? My mind always tells me, oh, it'll be okay. Oh, it's not that big a deal. Oh, it's fine, right? Like this is a good idea. To me, my way of life, my way of thinking and behaving and feeling seem the only normal one. I am restless, irritable, and discontented unless I can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by self-abandonment, by acting out, by stress, by overthinking, by controlling and fixing, all the things on the chaos creator list. Thinking behavior, which I see others taking with impunity, right? How come other people can scroll on their phone all day and not blow up their life, right? How come other people can kind of think and behave in fear-based ways or hold resentments, and it doesn't blow up their life? After I have succumbed to the desire again, as so many of us do, the phenomenon of craving develops. I pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to do it again. This is repeated over and over again unless I can experience an entire psychic change. There's very little hope of my recovery. So this piece about I was praying about what to talk about today, and this idea about acting out, being in the addictive cycle, essentially because I like the effect produced. I like how it feels. And I remember, the first time I did a workshop through BBA about 6 years ago, I remember having this revelation, like, holy crap, I'm addicted to feeling like crap, right? I'm actually addicted to stress. I'm addicted to feeling bad. Like, how weird is that, right? Like, I just thought, why would any, like, I thought all this time I've been trying to fix this condition, right? I've been going to therapy and doing self-help stuff and doing all the things I did for 30 years. I thought I was trying to fix feeling bad, but actually the trying to fix it was just part of it, right? As those of us that have done the work know. So it's like, wow, I'm actually habituated to this cycle, right? There's a feeling bad that it doesn't feel good, but it feels comfortable. It feels familiar. It's what I know, right? It's what I'm familiar with from growing up. It's what my neurotransmitters are entrained to at this point. So then what's the opposite of that? I started thinking about that, right? Like, well, so if I'm going for like this fix, right, this ease and comfort in being focused on controlling, fixing, obsessing, whatever, what your kind of brand of that is, it's like, well, what's the opposite of that? And to me, I was asked to speak about emotional sobriety, and I was like, well, for me, where I am in my emotional sobriety is, what does that even mean? To me, it means actually feeling, like my addiction is largely about avoidance, right? My addiction is about, I'm going to try and keep my attention everywhere except for being present, like being in this present moment. Present to my feelings, present to my body, existing in my body. And the kind of the bitch of that is that that's the only place to find God, for me, you know, when we talk about beliefs and what is it that we believe about God and this experience of God, you know, I thought beliefs are in my head, and there's a level of them that are, right? There's like what I think, and there's what I'll tell you I believe. But the real beliefs for me, like what I truly believe, there's like beliefs I hold dear that are in some ways sub-perceptual, right? That are deep down within. Those aren't really even things that I'm aware of. Those are just kind of these unconscious old beliefs that are driving me. The ones that we find out when we do inventory, right? As they kind of come to that surface and they get revealed to us. Those beliefs are what I really believe, right? So if you ask me what I believe, I'll tell you one thing. But if you looked at my life, you looked at how I think, you look at how I'm behaving, that tells you what I really believe. And so if I want to actually surrender those beliefs to God, I have to be present. This is bad news for me because my entire addiction is about not being present, right? Somewhere I got the idea a long time ago that it's not safe to be present, right? That there is no God, that there's that the world's not safe. I'm not okay. Other people are not okay. Things are not okay, right? And I have to be vigilant. I have to live, you know, like we on the chaos creating list, it says, you know, being in our heads all the time. That's me, right? Like I'm like, I got to stay 3 or 4 steps ahead of life, circumstances, other people, figure it out. Life's like a chess game, right? I'm trying to manipulate and figure out what's going to happen so that I can do the right thing now so as to not lose, right? To be okay. And what I found is that, well, obviously that doesn't work, right? But when I go to try and experience God, not just believe in God, but have an experience of God that would actually provide me the ease and comfort that I need, what I'm confronted with is a bunch of feelings that I don't want to feel, you know, like one of the beliefs that I found is that I have a core belief that I can't handle my, it's not just that I'm afraid of the experience of the feelings. It's like this idea that I can't handle them, that I'll be engulfed by them, that I'll be overwhelmed, that I'll completely come apart at the seams, right? That it just can't, that, and really that in a fear good would show there's not going to be any God there for me, right? That I won't be okay if I actually experience my feelings. And so for me, a lot of this like 10 step, this 11 step, like this turning to God is, for me, it's about turning to God, not just in my thoughts as I race, right? But like, can I ask God to support me in being present to what's true for me, right? To what's really true, what's really in my heart, what's really in my body, what's really happening. And then I don't need to tell God what to do. Like God knows what to do with that stuff. So I'm not sure how much sense this is making. I'm going to share a little example of this from the other day. So next week, I'm moving both of my parents, both who have Alzheimer's, into a memory care facility here in San Diego. And this has been a big part of my life for the last couple of years. And it's a really, I mean, it's a really hard situation. You know, my mom is very advanced. My stepdad is less so. And moving them into a facility is it's heartbreaking, right? And so, and it's overwhelming and there's a lot to do and think about. And I've been really working in my spiritual work to be present for the experience. And what I noticed over the last, I'd say week and a half or something like that, was that I started back into kind of like this addictive cycle, right? Where I was like, there was a little bit of me that recognized that I was sad and I had a heavy heart, right? And there was like one blow after another, like, oh, we found out the caregiver was stealing. Oh, you know, some of the sentimental jewelry she wanted to leave to me is gone. Oh, you know, like these different things that would happen, right? And I had some awareness. There was like that quiet awareness that this was sad. I was having some grief, you know, and there were feelings, but I kind of kept it just like in the, a little bit of my awareness. And in the meantime, I could feel myself becoming more overwhelmed, more stressed. And when I would pray, I was blocked, right? Like I would I would pray in the morning, and it was like, it started to feel rote. It just started to feel like words, you know? And I was like, I want this comfort. I want this support. I want to lean into my relationship with God. And I was like, I couldn't do it, right? I was just blocked. And finally, you know, I got some support on Monday, and I was like, you know, I just, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm having all these thoughts and blah, blah, blah. And all it took was someone saying, let's breathe for a moment together, Rachel, right? And let's see if you can just focus on, you know, asking for God to support you to be present to whatever is true for you right now. And just as simple as breathing and like using my senses to be in my body, feel my body in the chair, feel the breath in my nostrils. It took 2 seconds and it was like the floodgates were open, right? And I had that cathartic cry, and God moved the emotion through me. And God knows how to do that. I don't have to make that happen. I don't have to tell God what to do. It's like, if I can use my will and support of others to turn myself to be present, then God moves it through, you know? And I had this like real experience of healing, you know? And like, since then I've had just a lot more freedom, you know? And it's still sad, and it's still hard, and it's going to be, but what I know is that I can't live in my head and have a relationship with God. I can't have an intellectual relationship with God. If I want an experience that's going to actually change my heart, that's going to solve my restless, irritable, discontent problem, that's going to solve my, you know, kind of itchy, scratchy, like way of going through life. And so, you know, I find this sometimes to be a little bit of a dilemma, because it's like my addiction seems like it's in the way of what it is I need to do to connect with myself and with God. But what I find is that that's what the steps are for, you know, like that's what going through the steps are for. That's what staying in, you know, a first step experience and surrendering and asking God for help, that God can support me. It's a little bit, for me, it's a little bit of a paradox. Like I know that, that I can't do that without God. I can't drop into my body. I can't allow my feelings. I can't experience it without God, because on my own, I just don't have a lot of power to do that. But on the other hand, it is my job to use my will to turn towards God, right? Like God can't make that choice for me because I have free will. That's my belief. So I can't use the excuse like, oh, I'm just powerless to do it differently. I'll just go through life like this. I mean, that might've been true before I did the steps, but now I do have a solution. And now I do have to ask God to support me and to discipline myself and use my will to turn, to see where I'm restless, irritable, discontent, fearful, or feeling some, you know, some way where there's something kind of pushing up that wants to be revealed to me. And I have to ask to be supported in that and to actually experience what's true. Cause for me, what's true is not in my mind. Thanks, Andy. You know, I like this. I've heard recently this idea that, you know, I do need intellectual consent, right? I do need my mind to go along with the journey, because my mind is the one that makes that choice to use my will to turn to God. But my intellect is, so it's like necessary, but not sufficient to be able to do the work, to really be in that place where God lives, which for me is deep down inside. That's what the book said, is God exists deep down inside every man, woman, and child, right? And so I have to be willing to get supported and do the work to be present deep down inside, in my body, in my emotions, what's underneath my conscious awareness, to have God meet me there and to heal what comes up and to allow it to move through, so that I can have the gifts of living in the sunlight of the Spirit in the midst of calamity. And it's never something I'm going to be able to talk myself into or think my way out of, as much as I seem to continue to try and, you know, just bring that to my spiritual practice every day. So that's what I wanted to share about today. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Rachel. That was eloquent and beautiful.